Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me today, I have Brian Foreman in here, and he's got a plan to put together what's called the Foreman House to help homelessness in the area, and so he's on the program today to talk about it. Brian, welcome to Copper Country Today.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, let's start with why is this an important issue for you?
Well, for me personally, I've been involved with homelessness in the area through various human service agencies for roughly 20 years. I was on the initial Homeless Coalition board about 18 years ago, actually. And from that point to this point, I just started a position with Child and Family Services, and I'm back on the board. And services have improved, but that number one goal of having a shelter has never been achieved in those 18 years. And an opportunity came up. I wrote an article in the local paper here, and a local township picked it up and said, "Hey, we have a building for you." And that was the turning point. It was like, I have a spot, so now we can try to make it happen.
Now, it is really surprising to me because we have so many great help organizations here in the Copper Country, and the need for help is great. So, of course, we have a lot of groups that come and do that. Other than a few places like the Barber Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home for domestic violence victims, places like those, we really don't have what you would consider a homeless shelter. Yet there is a large homeless need here.
That's correct. And like you mentioned, Barber Kettle is a domestic violence shelter. So you are looking at women and children primarily. And where we saw the biggest need is in men, in individual men. Talked with folks over at Dial Help. When they get a call from a homeless gentleman, all they can do is refer them to Salvation Army, Love Inc., some of these other local agencies. And oftentimes those agencies will work with, they just changed their name. I want to say they're called the Community Service Agency out of Marquette. They were AMCAB, which was our homeless provider out of Marquette. They would help put them in a hotel for a week or try to get them back on their feet. But then after that, they're back on the streets. And so the suggestion was, well, we have the Inn in Marquette, which is an old hotel they made into a homeless shelter, and then Iron Mountain would be the next closest. So if you had anybody who was local, they had nowhere to go. They want to stay in the area. They don't want to go to Marquette. They don't want to live in Iron Mountain. And the best homeless shelter, meaning it provides meals and whatnot, is in Green Bay. So the distance was a problem. Yeah. And people want to stay local. So we do have a lot of local agencies helping, but we just didn't have that semi-permanent step, so they maybe have 3 to 6 months to get on their feet versus, you know, a few days to a week.
Well, what does homelessness look like here in the Copper Country?
Depends on the age demographic. We do have a variety of homeless that do go through the domestic violence shelters in Berga and in Houghton County. And that one typically is your mom and a kid or multiple children. We have our homeless teens, which through Child and Family, we do have a program where we can house up to 4 of them a year. So that's a good program to have available. The homeless teen typically looks like they're the kid who turns 17, drops out of school, or 18, doesn't have a plan, and their parents say, "Hey, it's time to go." And they end up couch hopping. They go from friend's house to friend's house or grandma, grandpa's, and eventually they burn out their welcome, and then they're just camping. You know, they're trying to find a way to survive. We have been trying to track our homeless veteran population, which the numbers aren't conclusive of how many we have, but they're starting to increase due to the level of mental health issues with veterans returning with PTSD, things of that nature. Homeless elderly, we don't really have. They tend to find a place. So either family takes them in or they end up in a nursing home or something where their Medicare will pay for it. And the latest thing, the trend I've seen is homeless families where everything breaks at home, you know, and they can't afford to pay for it, or they're in an apartment that's just not up to code, more or less, and something breaks there, and the landlord has to have everyone move, and they have nowhere to go. So it's a varied picture, and we do have transient homeless, but because of our climate, they don't stay very long. Our numbers were up in November from previous years because it was a warmer month. But typically, the homeless vacate the area that are just passing through. They leave before that first snowfall.
Now, when people normally try to picture in their mind homeless people living on the street, they picture, you know, what they've seen usually on TV with the alleyways full of cardboard boxes and the Skid Row type of look. Now, though we don't really see that kind of thing here, there are places where homeless people congregate with tents and other ways to try to keep warm.
And that is our area. Part of this project is what goes unnoticed are the folks that do live in a hunting camp. They live in a trailer in the woods or a tent. And they are homeless, but like you said, they don't fit that stereotypical homeless. So, and that's always been the fear that's been in the public eye that, oh no, if we have a homeless shelter, we're going to have these lines around the block, you know, and that, you know, that's a soup kitchen. There's a difference. And they have that image of all these unkept people with mental health issues and alcohol issues. And true, that does exist, but that's not our population. Our population are those that they maybe have a mild mental illness, they have some substance abuse issues, or they lost a job they did for 30 years because a business closed and that was their only skill, and they can't find work, or they just can't maintain their lifestyle. They go from a professional position and all of a sudden they're, you know, bagging groceries. You know, that's not the same level of pay. And the myth that unemployment is there to help people survive is a myth. I mean, you go from a full-time wage to a fixed income that's very low. Service-wise, food doesn't pay your rent, so you can get your bridge card from the state of Michigan and you can be fed. But if you don't have a place to cook it, you don't have a place to store it, you're living off gas station sandwiches that drain your benefits. So we have an interesting homeless population. A lot of young people from ages 16 to 22. And that's the scary part. You know, that's when they should be building their lives, not, you know, falling backwards.
A moment ago, you mentioned about the elderly population, and yes, we do have organizations that are designed specifically to help that age group, and there are a lot of programs that come into mind that are available when you reach that age. Does it play into it at all that people may think, well, if you're say 30 years old, it's sort of your own fault that you're homeless, because if you get to be 65 and you're out of a job or you're out of a home, well, then everybody lines up, you know, we want to help. But then if you're younger than that, we say you should be able to help yourself.
I think what happens is, you know, I ask this question. I'm a professor by trade too. I teach online. And one of the questions I ask in the course, I say, if your job were to end today, how many months before you'd be homeless? We're supposed to have 6 months of our income in the bank. I don't know that many people who have 6 months of income in their savings account. And I ask them how long, and it's everything from 2 weeks to the 6 month mark. And what happens? You come home and your significant other says, hey, we're done. Get out. Your stuff's on the front lawn. Do you have a security deposit? Do you have a place to go? And that's where, you know, yeah, you should be able to help yourself, but if you go from having a dual income, being in a married or other coupled relationship, to all of a sudden having a single income, or your job gets eliminated and you're, like I said, living on unemployment, it doesn't take long before that what was an affordable $60,000 to $100,000 mortgage, it just isn't affordable. And that's where you see people, they sell off what they can. And thankfully, the housing market seems to be going up a little, but, you know, well, 8 to 10 years ago, you owed more than your house was worth. So that really hurt people. And young people should be able to get back on their feet. And, you know, my idea here, having a shelter where, hey, okay, you're 25, you're unemployed, you're going to come in here, I'm going to work with you one-on-one, bring in other agencies. And in 6 months' time, you'll need to find your own place. And hopefully by then you'll have a job and have a little bit of savings. But to erase that initial burden of, oh no, I need a security deposit, oh no, I need this and that. And a lot of, unfortunately, kids suffer from not having credit, so they need a deposit for all the utilities. And it's kind of a painful thing to watch when they go to be independent and they realize it costs a lot of money to just put that first foot in a door somewhere.
And homelessness is the result of basically a snowballing effect, and it's a tough cycle to get out of. If you try to imagine, if you didn't have a home address or a home telephone, try to apply for an apartment or try to fill out a job application when it says, you know, list your address and you don't have one, or you don't have a way for them to contact you, or during the interview they ask you, you know, do you have transportation, or and you don't, you know, you're saying, no, I'm homeless. The chances of you getting that job drop significantly. Some place to go, at least to call your own, sort of a base of operations like the Foreman House would be one way to address that.
Well, exactly. You have at least, if you're living there, you would qualify. This is in the Village of South Range, this building. You would qualify for a P.O. box, you know, bare minimum. There are statewide services, I want to say LifeLink and some other things, where you can get a very basic cell phone that, you know, only has maybe 250 minutes for the month, but it's enough to get that phone call back. We just saw locally how when one transportation agency goes down, it affected a lot of clients I work with, because all of a sudden for them to come to Calumet, to Houghton, to work was impossible. You know, I saw people lose their jobs because they couldn't afford a double or triple the fare because someone had to come get them, or they had to beg for rides because all of a sudden transportation wasn't available. So, yep, not having transportation is huge. And granted, South Range is a little out of the way, but it's also within 5 miles of Houghton. So hopefully, you know, that'll be something in phase 4. I have 3 phases designed, but maybe by phase 4 we can get a van or something.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the Foreman House itself and where you are in the process, and give us a little bit of background as well.
Well, how this all started out is, like I said, over the years I've been involved in homelessness in the area, and over this past summer I had a relative go through what I call the homeless process. Arrived in town, nowhere to stay, nowhere to go. Everyone's houses were full. Was put up in a structure that definitely wouldn't be good for winter. And watched the process from arrival to getting a job to getting an apartment. And it came out right around 6 months' time that it takes to really get established. So I looked at that, and it caused me a bit of frustration that there wasn't somewhere, you know, what if it took 8 months? Then what do we do? Is this person sleeping in someone's basement? Are they on the couch in the living room? And that's not good for anyone's self-esteem to begin with. So I wrote an article. I write a column called Family Matters that I normally write about happy, cheerful things. I write about my family and development of my teens and things like that. And I just kind of went on a tangent about my frustration with the homeless problem in the area, that we just don't have a shelter and everything. And then the Village of South Range contacted me and said, hey, we might have a building for you. Can you come present to our board and we'll vote on it? Well, I went there. They gave me a key to go look at the building and talked to me about various contractors who have looked at it, and they had some estimates of what it would cost to redo and et cetera. So I went to their board meeting. I did a presentation, and then they voted yes in my favor to give me the building. And I remember them asking, well, what's that look on your face? I said, well, it's happiness and extreme fear all at the same time. The stress just landed on my shoulders. I said, but this is such a big step to at least have a picture to put on a flyer, to have an address to share where people can go by. Oh, okay, that's where it is. It's not next to my house. You know, that's everyone's fear, that they'll have a homeless shelter on their block. And from there, GoFundMe page has been started. I've written letters to the local churches. I do have some retired administrators in the area that are interested in working with me because they have all the connections. Jeffers High School's trades program, because I'm in their school district, may be interested in coming out and sending some of their kids in to do some of the drywall and some of the skilled things that would cost a lot of money otherwise, but they're not the ones that you need to pull permits for. You know, they're not the plumbing and electrical. And then public presentations such as this is where we're at. I have a meeting set up at the public library in January to present. And like I said, my agency I work for, we work with homeless teens and families as well. So it's a good opportunity to really spread the word. I see the Salvation Army is jumping on board too. They had an article in the paper where they have a similar idea, but a tad grander scale, which is good because the more the merrier. But they're at ground zero. They're just getting started. So it's nice. It's waking up the community a bit to say, hey, we need this, but let's do it right. You know, when you picture a homeless shelter in a city, you picture something like the Calumet Armory filled with cots. You know, that's not what we're shooting for. We're looking for almost assisted living for those that aren't elderly and just need that hand up. You know, that's my slogan. It's a hand up, not a handout. Mm-hmm. So to get them back on their feet. So that's where we're at.
And as far as what the Salvation Army is looking into doing, you're right, more the merrier. We could probably mm-hmm. use more than one service to address this problem because there's more than just a handful of homeless people. We're fortunate, I guess, as residents in that we don't see it with our naked eye every time we drive through downtown Houghton or downtown Hancock, but that doesn't mean it's not there.
And what we do see is you have the occasional backpack-wearing person that looks disheveled and they're walking, and that's the uniqueness of the area. They could either be homeless or they could be on the way to camp. You know, it's really hard to tell sometimes, but I have, over the years, approached people and engaged them in conversation to make that determination. Are they homeless or are they just dressed that way because they're a diehard Youper and have that look to them? And I've run across more homeless than people going to camp. So that's another factor. Back many years ago, Kaliva had, above the Kaliva, there was these really tiny rooms that was very, I guess, low-income, single-room boarding house, bathroom at the end of the hall kind of thing. And I worked with a group of young people. We would bring them sandwiches around the holidays and things like that. And it always stuck in the back of my head. It's like, well, what about the rest of the year? You know, what can we do? So, you know, something like Foreman House is a permanent place. One of the units downstairs would be open to have a shower available for those that do live in those hunting camps. And then also just a kitchen where they could come in and make food, you know, bring their own food in if they want, or we'll have some on hand. And then something that's gained a lot of popularity, particularly in Marquette, is a warming center. You know, where do you go during the day if you're homeless and it's 20 below? You know, it's somewhere to go just to sit in a chair and even sleep in a chair. You know, just to be warm it's all part of the goal. You know, just a safe place to go.
I knew a fella a couple of years ago where he was living in a tent. There's a lot of, you know, public land, you know, that mm-hmm. you can get lost in pretty quickly. And so he would live in a tent and move it every now and then. And then when he would have to travel long distances, and sometimes he would, you know, he was over towards the Baraga side, but oftentimes he had to come to Houghton and he would make the journey. Well, he couldn't go back and, you know, there and back in the same day. And he would sleep in dugouts at ball fields because it had a bench, it was covered. And talking to him, he was like, well, it's, you know, it's at least something. I can't afford a hotel and I don't have a car. And so that's what he did. Now, with something like the Foreman House, what steps you need to take to keep it safe?
Well, one thing, it hasn't been inhabited since 2001, and that's just evidenced by mail and when the village, it was returned to the village via taxes. A lot of the interior doors need to be exchanged out for the metal doors. Right now, a lot of them are wooden with padlocks on the outside, and that's just not... It's not safe for them to be in there because someone could lock it from the outside as a prank. And as owner of the building, if there is some concern somebody perhaps was ill or died, you would need to get in. So all the doors would have to be redone. A quarter of the windows would need immediate replacement, but the others seem like they could be repaired. Fortunately, it's not one of the buildings that was horrifically vandalized, you know, in the area, and that's always a good thing. So it's a solid structure. The contractors who worked with the village said that it is a solid structure. Can't get on the roof yet. It would need a fire truck or another boom truck of some kind to get up that high. But there is some evidence of leaking towards the back of the building. It has a flat roof, but it slopes just slightly. So those would be the main things to get the exterior done, is just the interior doors. The exterior door is solid, just needs a new lock, and then it needs some stairs going in. The stairs have vanished once upon a time, so... not a whole lot to make it a secure building. It's just more to get rid of the water damage. When the building was closed, it was abandoned, so water pipes broke. On the plus side, whoever owned it last redid some of the wiring, actually used all copper piping, so there's a lot of updates. The furnaces all seem to be intact, all six of them, which is a little bit overkill. I'm hoping to downsize on those. But the main structure and the utility setup seems to be pretty solid. It's a matter of all the carpeting, a lot of the walls need to be redone. All the appliances are rusted in, not all of them. Three of the gas stoves could be salvaged. The rest are, you ever open a fridge that's been closed for 15 years? It's quite the eye opener. So those type of things are where the bigger costs come in. Labor, I don't think is going to be an issue. I've had many, many phone calls and emails of people volunteering from everything from just helping load that dump truck that first month to some basic painting and things of that nature. My hope is that I can find the skilled tradesmen for the plumbing, for the inspect the electrical, inspect the furnaces, and if not free, maybe a reduced rate. I mean, I'm realistic. They have to feed their families too. I don't expect everyone to volunteer their time. But it's encouraging. I mean, the support has been there. It's the hardest part is it is a huge financial challenge, and the initial estimate is upwards of $60,000. And I've renovated houses over the years, and I know there's other ways to lower that cost. So our realistic goal is $50,000 overall, but we're trying to shoot for half of that for next summer, so we can at least get the first floor open. So there's somewhere where people can come and look. So a lot of people are hands-on. They want to see what they're investing in. They want to make sure, one of the arguments is, oh, you're not a nonprofit. I said, well, nonprofits make money and they survive off the government. This will be, out of the six apartments, two of the larger ones will be rented to cover the utilities and the taxes in the building. I said, I'd like to make a profit of at least a dollar, but it's not something where I'm going into it for profit. I want it to be self-sufficient.
Well, nonprofits can generate money as long as that money goes towards
right.
the functioning of the service. So I would really recommend that you do pursue that. It is a long haul. And part of how people can help, well, people that are knowledgeable on how to set up a 501c3 is something that somebody can do to help. Maybe they don't have a boatload of money, or they don't know any plumbing or electricity work, but they know how to set up a nonprofit organization. I think that you'll really, really want to have that. So we'll put the call out right now that among the, helping with the GoFundMe account, or if you've got some skilled trades to be able to, donate a little bit of time, materials, because you're going to need materials, appliances, also, if you know any kind of, if your skills is more into administration or grant writing, because it sounds like you would qualify for a number of grants that you where it's not required for all the money to be raised publicly and locally. So, those are some big areas where I think people could step in right now in this stage and make a huge difference.
And definitely. And I've written grants over the years, but never a large scale one. They're always youth-based. I've worked in youth organizations most of my career. So you're looking at the $500 to $2,000 grants, things of that nature. But yeah, definitely anyone who has that ability, I'd be interested in hearing about it and see what the process is. I was on a board, and it took us 2 years to get the nonprofit started. But once you have it, as long as you follow the rules, do your reporting and everything. So definitely, if there's anyone out there that I'd be interested in being contacted.
Ryan, if somebody does need to contact you, do you have a website, and also do you have your GoFundMe information?
Website-wise, if you're on Facebook, you can search for Foreman House. It is a page. My name, Brian Foreman, is also searchable on Facebook. It would come up as well. I do own a local business. I'm there on Saturdays if you want to stop in and chat. That's 413 Sheldon Avenue if you want to stop in, Wicked and Wise. Phone number 370-8444. I'm not shy about giving that out. Can call me. And GoFundMe, I'm not positive you can search it at this point. We have roughly, I believe it's at $370, and I believe GoFundMe's search policy is $500, but we should be there shortly. But if you search by zip code, I believe it'll come up. But if not, Foreman House on Facebook, there'll be a link to the GoFundMe from Facebook.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it.
Good luck with the Foreman House. I'm Rick Allen. Keep Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.